This is working now.
Yeah, it's working.
I was here, yeah, I think I read the few advices. And the last two, he says, or three, he says, try to create a piece of literature that transcends architecture. That is a big task, you know.
What, tell me what, tell me a little bit more what you mean.
Well, that it can be because of the images and the way it is written, so can create some curiosity to those who are not interested in architecture, who are not related to schools of architecture.
I see.
This is what I tried to do with my book. I don't know whether I succeeded, you know, but it was a kind of attempt to do that. And the other is to emphasize the place.
The place.
The region. The idiosyncrasy, what is the name?
Idiosyncrasy. Yes.
In relation not only to the United States but abroad, but beyond. Because the way that I see Raleigh is like in the world, it's nowhere. It's nowhere, you know?
Yes.
No, because when I mentioned to you today Isfahan, Isfahan is also nowhere. But when you are in Isfahan, you find that you are somewhere because of the art and the music. So it's not really it's not like Raleigh, you know. But it has its place in history and so when I see Raleigh, it's a place that was nowhere, but it has a special characteristic and of its own. And also I see it as a place that was totally isolated from civilization. And yet searched for civilization and got civilization and all the visitors that came were of the best quality. So it's not that they maintained their provincialism and they cook within their own juice, but they got out of the, their own juice.
Well, see, that's the thing that I think needs...
The fact that Nervi gave a lecture there, he spent 15 days in the school. He was his first trip to America.
First trip to the U.S., I know.
To America, you know. And the Torroja was there. And I don't have too much regard for Le Ricolet. In a way, but he was there too. I don't think that he did anything in the school, maybe call it during my time, you know. But Samieli was there for 2 weeks, and he worked beautifully. He's the one that performed best, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he was in the class every day, he went to the blackboard. We were doing a hyperbolic revolution, and he suggested how to construct it and the drawings and it was a man who went there and took it seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you can help me is to explain how that happened. Why do you think it happened in Raleigh? Why? How did all of those people come together?
Who are they?
All these people that you were referring to, the visitors, the faculty that was brought from all over the country, from all over the world.
Well, it was a contribution of a group of persons in a way. Each one may be in his own field. Suppose the fact that Duncan was there, but Mr. Fuller was there. I don't know whether Duncan learned from but Mr. Fuller what he knew and got an inspiration and they superseded by Mr. Fuller, in my opinion. Because Fitzgibbon didn't understand anything. And Blomberg was a puppet behind the movement, you know, to join the group because it was what you supposed to do. And then there were tension between the Bacchus and the Novakis.
Yes.
So between, and then I saw that I fit by my previous background into the mentality of the so-called exploration of Duncan and but Mr. Fuller, different ways. I am more an architect than both of them, so I have my handicaps on one side, you know, and then a different way to use that information, because the one of Duncan stays as a kind of a geometric documentation. He did one on the subdivision of the sphere that was published in the
yes.
That is an interesting thing, beautiful drawing, freehand drawing by him, but it stops in the sphere. One thing would be to have done something with the sphere there, from another point of view, you know, from an architectural point of view, whatever it is. And then as far as the emphasis and structure, I think that I did it. If you disagree, just don't write that. And then the those people, like Nervi and Samueli and Torroja came through me, I think. And Torroja was done as a combination, Torroja was done, yes. Torroja was done as a combination because he came to MIT also.
Yes,
and I think that I wrote to Henry in order to share the expenses. This is my recollection, you know. So he flew there and gave a few lectures and then we came to MIT. Because when Torroja was in Cambridge for a week, he came every day for dinner to my house.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was a kind of a link in language. And
yeah, he met with the fifth year class in Raleigh the year that I was in my okay. last year there with Caminos.
Okay.
And he was there very, okay. I think about a week or okay. something.
And Mario Salvadori, I have no idea. But Salvadori taught in my class, and that he didn't teach well.
We had some other very good engineers afterwards. Pizzetti?
Pizzetti was in MIT.
Yeah, well, he came to Raleigh, too, and there was one other.
Maybe I recommended him to Henry.
Yeah.
Because you were with Pizzetti, and when you sing, and not because we did that square helicoid, that I remember Pizzetti was with me. He says, why don't we work, because there is nothing cheaper than the faculty labor.
well, student labor is cheaper.
Yeah, it was really cheaper, yes. Yeah. And Boas, I don't know who did it, maybe Fitzgibbon, maybe Henry.
Well, how did he fit in?
Boas.
He was a philosopher or something.
I told you that I have a book of philosophy here that I have to check what is his.
I have some very nice photographs of him.
Yeah.
In a number of meetings where people were sitting around, and he always seemed to have a very outgoing expression.
He was a little bit short, a little bit bald,
yeah.
With a mustache.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He seemed to be very lively in the photographs yeah. and everything.
Let me see here, because I see what it is, a book. Ouch.
But I think you were telling me yesterday that the faculty pretty much selected the visitors, that these were people that you all... Henry didn't do much of that,
I
did
don't
he?
Know. Can I, there are boys that
boys.
I have, not because of age, but because I have... Those are in the thing. but because something happened. Suppose there was a man that maybe used to have it, Sjogren.
Vernon Sjogren, yes. He's retired.
He became an alcoholic, right, or not? The Sjogren. I remember when he came, and I remember when he was interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if he suggested his name. Don't have any latest ideas, you know?
He had worked with...
He was
from... Well, he got a Fulbright scholarship.
He
was at MIT.
He was from Minnesota.
Minnesota originally, but then he got a graduate degree at MIT, and then he got a Fulbright, and he spent a year in Europe, I think mainly in France, photographing the windows at Chartres, and then he came. I don't know, maybe somebody at MIT had a connection with that suggested him.
Well,
the reason I'm trying to get at that is that Henry is often given, I think, almost all of the credit by people who don't know any better. They think, well, that Henry Kamphaeffner is responsible for having identified everybody that he was able to bring, to bring people to the school. And I know he certainly did some of that.
What you have to be careful is that there are people who have ego. And you can include me in the group that may claim things that they did that they didn't do it.
Well, I'm very skeptical of the things that, you know, this. I know how Henry. I mean, I know Henry better than I know.
No, I don't mean that Henry had ego. Mm-hmm. Henry had a lot of ego, but I mean also the people that you interview.
Yes.
They may suggest that they did things or that they participated because maybe they did it, but not in the intensity.
Yes.
That they claim they did. I tell you that I don't recall who invited Salvadori.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall. Nelly, I know very well, you know. Torroja, I know that when he came to MIT, I think that I wrote to Henry because to share. He said he came to MIT directly through Bielewski.
Mm-hmm.
No, he was invited before I arrived to MIT.
Well, he also, I think he came to Raleigh when I was doing this first teaching stint, the 2 years before I came to MIT. I think he was there in the class.
Well,
From 59 to 61, somewhere in there, and I don't know exactly when, because I remember I went out to dinner with Pizzetti and with, I believe, Horatio or some, a couple of times while he was there. But I was a junior, the most junior member of the faculty at that time.
Also, I can tell you that Torroja was in Raleigh probably in 1957 or 58.
But it would have been 57 because 57. I graduated in 57.
Because he used to come to dinner in my house in a dreadful kitchen that we have in Longfellow Road before we moved to Charlie.
That's it.
You know, sometimes relate things like that.
Yes. Yeah. It would have been in the 56 to 57 year because that was my fifth year. There are a few things I can fix like that because I know at 57, I went to Europe and I was gone for a year, so it couldn't have been 58.
Sometimes I fix something in relation to my divorce. That is another date. You can read it just a little bit because you have
this. This is Don Boas.
This is Boas.
He died in 1980, American philosopher. John Hopkins, 1920 to 1957. It's hard to know.
One thing that you can do also is to use information like that in order to know who those persons were, you know.
Well, most people are in who's who too. I mean, to get you know, details about their birth and things like that.
I don't know how it's depends what information they give, you know. Mm-hmm. This is a book of philosophy and religion, and maybe it provides a greater in. and one problem would be, it's a pity that maybe the lectures given were never recorded.
I know.
Or were not written, and there is not a record. Suppose for the one that I gave to in relation to Pietro, I felt that because he gave such a large amount, the school had the obligation to print the lecture, not my speech, the lecture of the lecturer who gave it,
mm-hmm.
and to keep a file of the so-called Pietro Bielewski's lecture, and I sent a copy of my speech. So in the history of the Pietro Bielewski lectures is that mm-hmm. the day that they was inaugurated, such event took place, you know? But you know how the schools are. And Pietro was not very well. I think that Pietro was ignored more than what he deserved, because Marsh mentioned to me something that surprised me, that Pietro made a comment that after he left the teaching, he stayed in Boston for 8 years, and nobody invited him to come back to MIT, and Anderson was the dean. And the least that you can do from dean to dean, and he was a notorious architect, is to say, why don't we invite Pietro? He left 4 years ago, let's say.
Not notorious. He was notable. He was famous.
Well, notorious doesn't mean the same.
Notorious has a negative, is a negative meaning.
Uh-huh.
But he was. I mean, I know what you mean.
I learned today. He was a very well-known architect. And they can invite him, why not? To give a lecture, to show his work, the formatting of MIT. The students didn't know who the formatting of MIT now. They begin to relate to the history of the school. Even they could have invited me, I tell you, for juries. I feel that I am a resource.
Yes.
Free.
Of course.
Free. Free, you know, and that is an outsider that can judge and can have a different opinion. And
well, at the very least, I think we treated Henry, even though he was a bit.
We
treated Henry with more honor than they treated than MIT has treated you.
But your school treated me 100 times better than MIT, because still up to the maybe 3 years ago. I keep going every so often there, appear in some occasions. The fact that even there was that ceremony when the Roy and the Horatio and myself went, it was a wonderful idea for the students to see who were those persons, who were one in the school, you know? It was very nice.
Yes. I remember it, man. Yeah. So, I remember being at Claude McKinney's house and Roy at that occasion. I think you all were there. He was having some drinks or dinner or something, and Roy, I think he was thinking of Henry, but he says, you know, to be a dean, you have to be a little bit of a son of a bitch. And Claude McKinney and his wife just kind of blanched at that. I mean, the faces just dropped because they're so polite in every way.
Also, what I wrote here is that maybe what you have to emphasize is the human aspect of the school, the atmosphere of the school, the life of the students. Because it was a special kind of a life,
yes.
With the barracks and the people. When I arrived at the beginning, it was the GIs. They were older than me, some, and they were all married. And they lived in the barracks. They were not as young bachelors as they are today. And I say that also the GIs were the last generation of the previous regime.
The last generation of the previous regime.
Yeah. Because when I arrived, I think that it was the last year of the Shoemaker era. And then I began to read Percy Mamoto and Ralph Knowles or Fred Taylor. Fred Taylor maybe was the one that did the full 5 years under Tom Pofner. You can find it out where it is.
Okay.
And then one of the things that I found is that the GIs, being older, probably. First, the school was not very good, because you cannot build a school in 4 years. I think that Henry went there in 1948.
That's right.
I arrived in 51, so it's 3 years, let's say. And we had to build a school. We had to do it in many years. So all the lead of the past is very hard to remove. And so when I arrived to the school, they were all the GIs. And then they were in the war, fighting. They didn't practice for 4 years with the tragedy and the suffering and so on of the war. And they were not very good.
They were not good students,
they
generally.
They were not good students.
Were they too practical, or they weren't just weren't motivated, or what was the...
Uninspiring.
And you found a difference when the younger students came in?
Because the first the inspiring class was with Richard Lehman and Cameron. Do you know them or not?
I know who they are, but I didn't know them personally.
Yeah, Richard, but both are dead.
Yes.
And some others, you know, that they have. Elizabeth Lee, I don't recall whether it was the first year or the second year.
She was in the same class with Bruno.
Then it was the one of Fred Taylor, too. That was the best, you know. But you were not with me at that time.
No, I'm sure you're right.
No, so then what I found that is written here is that there was a need to raise the standard of the school.
Okay.
And the way that you can raise it is through a shock, or to do something completely different. So when I did the stadium, the Santa Maria La Niña La Pinta, I plotted everything. Duncan helped with the geometry. I plotted everything. I remember I was in bed with the flu. I don't know whether Bucky was living in my house at that time or not. And then I began to develop the idea of the stadium. And then I expressed to the class, painting an orange, I think it was, and peeling the orange to show the, how you call those things, that you remove from each orange, how you call it?
I don't know what you, well, I don't know, the orange peel.
You peel the orange, but then you remove all those.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about,
It's not called gourd, no.
I don't know, I don't think
it's so. Like what you cut in the grapefruit.
Yeah, I know the white part, the sort of...
The fruit.
Oh, the fruit itself.
The fruit.
The sections of an orange.
It has the shape of a crescent.
Well, I don't know, we call them orange
sections.
Secciones.
I remember the black boa in Daniel's Hall. It was quite long, mm-hmm. almost from wall to wall. And I did 21, I think it was something like that. Rectangles. Each one was a sheet. And the material that has to go on the sheet and what it's supposed to do and so. And then it was the day that the project was finished, they were so beautifully built models at a large scale, like that. The person who did the space frame, a little piece by field, thousands of pieces, the plaster with the hexagonal divisions, the other with the sunflower structure, and it covered the full corridor of the third floor. And instead of having little pieces of tracing paper and the individual expression, the one this little drawing with his own handwriting and titles and like this, there was a great unity.
Mm-hmm.
The class worked as a team. I think that it helped the morale of the class, you know. And then you use this for the next year as a point of reference. Mm-hmm. That it was the University of Minnesota. That's in a way created from the point of view of presentation, you know?
Yes.
But they didn't have any. And probably my first year was a tough year for me, and for the students. First, my language and the lack of experience, and they belong to another generation. People who see that outsider coming from somewhere, you know? When they were not used to that. I don't know which he was there, but maybe he was master in the situation, maybe he was a more knew better English and knew how to manage six with more grace, who knows, eh?
Mm-hmm.
But I have a student who was not very qualified.
Each year you had a sort of a different project or program for the students. I know that one year you had the hyperbolic paraboloids, and I remember when I was in the fourth year, in your last year there, the students did large residential buildings and with fairly complex geometries in some cases, large scale structures for housing, if I'm not mistaken. I remember it's one that Murray Wisnan did with sort of similar, partly based on Corbusier's Unité de Habitation. Do you remember that project?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't remember it with great detail. I'm going to talk to Murray and some of the people around North Carolina. That
I remember that last year, if it was a share in the class with Charlie Kahn, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
There were five students who didn't qualify, were not quite ready for prime time. And I put it in a special group. And one was Charlie Kahn, don't mention to him, please, because I have great regard for him too, very nice man.
Yeah.
He would have resented my attitude, but I was a person who, like a beast. And I put them in a special room, that they need a special training,
mm-hmm.
that they couldn't share the project of the class, and they had to go through different kinds of exercises. That is not very, if I look backward, is not too stimulating for the students.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking of something that you mentioned earlier that right now I've lost track of. But
the region or the place the human aspect. I have written a sentence here that said that the book has to transcend Raleigh, to allow Raleigh to transcend. The book has to transcend Raleigh, to allow Raleigh to transcend.
One of the things that people around Raleigh are most aware of are all of the buildings, more of a handful of buildings that were built by the faculty during that period.
Or residential.
Most residential. I mean, the arena is probably the one
yes.
large public building, but the others were houses
yeah.
that kind of stood out.
And the arena to recognize Nowicki got a lot of attention in the country, mm-hmm. in a way.
Yeah, that was the thing I wanted to come to. The School of Design immediately, within the first 4 or 5 years, became recognized nationally among schools of architecture, not just in this country, but internationally.
But it was through the arena.
You think primarily, mainly?
It was the first major work that
But then the publications and the competitions that you and Horatio won, and that George's houses began to get published in architectural, I don't know, record houses and things like that. So there were a whole group of things like that.
There was a time, I suppose, I think that I have written here. Because the stations, the Santa Maria, La Niña, and La Pinta were published in Architectura del Jure, mm-hmm. with two colors. The Hyperbolic Parabola is an architectural review in London, and then in several magazines, as an architecture in California, there was a special article in the Architecture Forum that related to my house as a compliment.
Yes.
That is independent from the one of House and Home,
right.
And then in Pencil Point of Progressive Architecture, so the in Japan. In Venezuela, all those things. You have two magazines from Japan with all those things. And my opinion is that Tange was affected by that.
I'm sure he was.
He did a church and that and some other work there. And that there was not too much of that kind at that time.
I think people.
Doppio was very much impressed, you know, with that. Mm-hmm. And,
I think a lot of.
If you like, I gave you those Japanese magazines.
I'd like to see
with the condition that you return to
I
me.
I could copy it, maybe make some copies of the publications. Yeah, I don't have those. But the.
Very similar to the student publication, the same square things, you know,
mm-hmm.
cheaply built, printed.
What I was trying to see were there the sort of reputation that the school acquired very early, both within the state. It was looked upon, I think, as a source of pride because people recognized that here in Raleigh and here at the NC State that a school of architecture was being recognized internationally, with international publications and awards and things like that. But I think similarly, a lot of people who were students at my age knew about, and faculty members as well, but knew about the School of Design because they were aware in their schools, they heard about things that were happening.
Before they joined it?
Well, I mean, if they were a student, somebody like Peter Sampton at MIT, I mean, they began to read about the faculty and in a few cases some of the student work as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one thing that I doubt if any school of architecture has ever been quickly, in such a short time, been recognized as you know, nationally and internationally as the school did. And it seems like it was more than just a stroke of luck. It wasn't just, I think it was more than just the arena, although the arena perhaps was the most visible example. But as you said,
the arena alone, without the the faculty that followed no week.
Yeah. It would have died.
It would be one element of the school, you know. Because also somebody who brought name to the school was by Mr. Fuller.
Right.
When he did that cotton mill, whatever it is, that
textile mill. Yeah.
And I was going to mention something that was, probably one contribution that Henry made, that I would have not done it, but it's because of my, the way I am. Mm-hmm. The way based on my belief, is that he maintained a very cordial relation with the architects of the city. And he got the great support from them. Because usually there is a resentment between the so-called academic life, those people who are there, you know, and we know what we do and we have to fight for our jobs and that we don't get enough Rahman and they are playing with us. And I think that Henry was able to get along well with the local architects. Of all kinds, the good and the bad, it didn't make any difference, you know. They were all friends, needed friends for him. From the bad ones, the worst kind of the best. And there were not too many good ones in that period. Dietrich, to have a building in a fire tower or something like that. Maybe the first one of the new generation was Milton Small, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, Milton came about the same time the school started.
Milton studied with me Van der Rohe.
Yes, right. He had been a student at Oklahoma.
Okay. Of Camp Hoffner, what?
And then he went to Mies van der Rohe for graduate school.
To the bus.
Now it's working. Yeah. you mentioned that you have some anecdotes that you've written about there, but what I was just wondering if there were some special moments or particular events that were that sort of summarized or exemplified some of the things that were special about your time there at the school. Were there times when there were individuals there or particular projects or groups of students that you could talk about that could kind of illuminate some of the qualities that or the character of the school had to get that time?
I think it was more nothing explosive or something unexpected,
mm-hmm.
but it was a continuous excitement in a way, day by day. And, people, at least I can trust the enthusiasm of the students. They were always committed with great enthusiasm. I remember everybody, when Ragnar and Toshimamoto and many others were working on this structure.
Mm-hmm.
And also they were coming at the Wally Parable, also that Raf is a very nice model, beautiful model. And there was always a spirit of collaboration, and that they never complained as being with the whip. But I thought that it was a freshness, and I usually emphasize, as I mentioned to you before, the place and the geography and the combination between the isolation of the place and the need for the creation of a community, and that they found it in the school and in friendship, the social life between the faculties, and also the wife of the faculties.
Okay. Well, let me see if I can make this question meaningful. There were a lot of students from North Carolina. Some came from other places, like Bruno.
No,
and Paul,
mostly were from North Carolina.
Mostly from North Carolina.
Well, what I mentioned to you is that I praised what I say, that kind of genuine attitude of the farmers,
mm-hmm.
that they were not sophisticated, neither cynics, like the one of New England, that we find, let's call it the Northeast.
Okay.
or the big cities. And that gives to them, a purity. Mm-hmm.
Well, Henry, if you read the early catalogs or bulletins of the school, there's a very high-sounding statement about the region. It talks about regionalism. It talks about the region of North Carolina and Southeast.
By the regionalism of Henry, was the regionalism of Bruce Goff and maybe Frank Lloyd Wright.
But that, do you think there was any validity to that
it's
at all?
No, it's a different kind of regionalism that I'm talking about. The regionalism of Henry was in expression,
yes.
In architectural expression, to express, let's say, the climate, the whether it's a good country,
mm-hmm.
Suppose the Lustig caught the regionalism of the Northwest.
Right.
And then Henry was a romantic.
Yes.
And then this regionalism may deal with some degree of romanticism with the place. While it was interesting that he, being a romantic and a regionalist, he had a faculty, with the exception of Fitzgibbon, that was not romantic at all.
They were all international.
Well, they were logical. They were rational.
Logical. That was my impression too, yeah. That this was more for public consumption. It was kind of a political. It had a sort of public relations benefit to be published, to be sent out to students, and for the administration of the university.
I would say that it was more for the university administration, just to say that, show that they were the local boys,
yes.
Compared with the local tradition and so on. But he was sincere.
Yes.
He was sincere, because even the design of his house tried to show that kind of little bit, you know?
It did. On the other hand, I could argue that it's no different from the one he did in Oklahoma. And when Harwell Harris came in 1961,
yes.
He brought with him the ideas that he'd had in California.
Well, but it depends also how much you segregate regions.
Right, that's
because
true.
You have the West, there is the Northwest and the South. And the South is Texas South, where is the border line? But there is a, give me the yellow, that center, give me the yellow. That is covered the whole region,
mm-hmm.
As far as pronunciation is concerned, you know, in spite of the differences. What happened also that Henry was a great belief in modern architecture, he was not even age.
I know.
And even I tell you one thing, when he did when he wrote the text, because I'm sure that he wrote it himself, of the Campovne Prize that is printed in the diploma that they get.
Yes.
Wisdom won the prize, and he was very proud of that, and he has to be. I read the text, and I wrote to Wisdom, and I disagreed with the text, because it was an aggressive text. It was a little bit full of venom against the other group, whatever the other group was, you know, in order to defend the modernism. And that was not the place for the diploma to do it. You had to be more universal and
it's made it very narrow. I've argued that what they ought to do is not to limit it to people in North Carolina. I mean, among the architects that have made a major contribution to...
No, if he wants to do it, it's his money, why not, you know?
Money,
and he made the money with from North Carolina, he was very generous. I think that he behaved very nicely and selfish. Because he gave except the house, right? This price is a permanent price or not?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. And sometimes it will fall into the hands of somebody who really denies Henry's ideas.
Well, yeah, this is really nothing to do with this particular thing,
yeah.
But I've always felt that it would be much better if the pool of candidates could include people who lived in North Carolina at one time in the past. That would suggest that George Matsumoto and Harry Wolff and Eduardo Catalano and everything would be people who would be eligible for it, whereas now you have to live in the state, and the candidates that really are worthy of receiving that are very few.
The thing would be to give it to younger, promising persons.
Yes. Well, I don't know how what the terms where they permit them to change the rules of that. I don't know whether that's possible, but it's the.
I wrote to Wisdom about it once. I wanted to change it. I don't remember what I wrote, you know, mm-hmm. because I was concerned. They would like to give some prizes in Argentina. My father was an artist, but if they have the trustees change.
When you left the school to come to MIT, was did you sense that the school could continue in the directions it was going, or was there a concern for, you know, where it might change or how it would continue? I mean, George Matsumoto was still there, Horatio was still there. Did you, what was your perception of the school at that point? Was it sort of over its most robust period, did you think, or what was the...
I don't recall whether but Mr. Fuller had stopped coming.
He'd stopped coming by then.
He stopped coming. Yeah. I don't recall why, because whether he was in disagreement with something.
I don't know.
Or whether he was attracted more by something in Chicago, somewhere, where he was or not.
I'm not sure. He had stopped a year or so, maybe one
who
year.
Who could replace this Gibbon?
I'm not sure. Joe Boaz came to the school about that time. You remember Boaz was a...
Oh, Boaz, he was a big man.
Sort of heavy set thug.
He was from Raleigh or Charlotte. Or
no, he'd been in Oklahoma as well. He was another associate, friend of Smalls and
yes.
Henry. Boaz. I think he'd been a student of Henry's, quite frankly.
Yes, Boaz.
I don't know whether he was,
the boy that you were talking,
there was
another
two.
Boaz that is used.
No, I was thinking of the philosopher, but the other, there are two Boazes, and there was always a little confusion, people who didn't know them both, but Joe Boaz came, Vernon Shogren came.
Vernon Shogren.
I can't say who replaced who exactly.
Then there was another with the name of Bachelor or not.
Well, he didn't come to much later,
uh-huh.
much later. Uh-huh. Of course, Jim Adams came during that time.
What time Duncan left?
Oh, Duncan stayed until 8 or 10 years ago. Duncan was there until he almost was at retirement age. He quit about 2 years before retirement, a little like Wayne Taylor did. I think he got fed up. He was, both of them were involved in the kind of administration of that group of the first year. See, the school changed its administration, and they gave that first year group, the artists, let's call them the artists and graphic designers, their own department, and then it became a kind of constant struggle. It was, they struggled between the architects and the landscape architects, and the sort of art, fine arts group became much more intense when they were defined as a department. They had their own department head. They were teaching first year design, and if anybody would say you ought to teach descriptive geometry, they said we'll teach whatever we damn well please. And Duncan was always very contentious. I mean, he wouldn't give an inch. And finally, they had a position that they were going to interview. Maybe it was more than 10 years ago, but they were interviewing for a position to bring a young person into the first year faculty. And Duncan had a person he wanted. It was one of his proteges, and the rest of the people in the
school.
He had graduated from the school, but Duncan knew him very well, and Duncan wanted to bring him in. The rest of his faculty voted for somebody else. With that, Duncan quit. I mean, within a few couple of months, he just quit. He was dissatisfied, but he was more angry at his colleagues in that department, and that's really what happened to Wayne Taylor. Because they complained about the way he was running the department. I mean, Wayne was acting as the department head, and he was really hurt. I mean, it hurt his feelings that they
Wayne,
and this just happened a year ago.
Who hurt his feelings?
Some of the faculty members in his department. It wasn't because of a fight with people in other.
Which department was?
With the what's called the design department.
Uh-huh. Or the design department.
Yes, even though Wayne sometimes taught architecture courses,
yeah.
but. But his real allegiance was to that design department, just
design,
as Duncan was.
For design department, you call the basic design, or
the it's what used to be called basic design.
I remember that once I went to North Carolina, and I was in one of the studios, and I saw Duncan teaching, and I felt depressed. I don't remember the psychological reason why. But he was repeating all over again every year the same task, and that the teacher was doing all the same thing, you know, and that you found it. And the same thing happens to me too at MIT. One day when I was there, I looked through a door and looked at the window at the jury, and then when I began to hear the